We've been talking in the show about the misinformation, disinformation, and fake cures being peddled regarding the coronavirus. But that conversation brought us to consider another type of misinformation, and it's a big one. Conspiracy theories, supposed explanations dependent on secret malevolent instigators.
We are deep, deep into this. So rather than coming up for air or daylight, let's continue our exploration into the murky depths as led by Assistant Professor of Communications and Rhetorical Studies, Whitney Phillips.
So, Whitney, backing up and taking your point there that this is part of a larger picture, is it the human psychology that we just want to think that something terrible, like the coronavirus, happened for a reason? It wasn't just a random thing, something more deliberate than, say, you know, the mutation of a virus in a bat that jumped species. You know, that has no bad guy.
Right. I heard, and I wish I could place it more specifically, but in response to Kennedy assassination conspiracy theories, I heard something that resonated with me. And it was this idea that having a villain is more psychologically reassuring than having no explanation at all. And I'm a little remiss to make kind of broad speculative claims about why people think the way they do. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not interviewing the people who hold these beliefs. But human beings, generally speaking, we do engage the world through narrative and through coherent narrative. And when you have random events that aren't connected in any kind of coherent narrative way, that's difficult to process. And so it makes sense that people would map coherence onto particular events, even if the details they use to do that are bonkers and end up creating a sort of bonkers narrative. It is for that person, based on their experience, based on their training as a citizen within the world, based on a whole host of things, those theories can make sense to them, even if they are absolutely disconnected from empirical reality.
So what is it about this crisis, this COVID-19 crisis, that makes us vulnerable to such theories? It seems to spawn them.
In some ways, we're living in highly precedented times that conspiracy theories have existed long before this and have even taken similar forms to what we're experiencing now, not with COVID-19, but with subversion myths and government conspiracies and all of that. That's existed before. What is unique about our present moment is the way that our information ecosystem functions. And in particular, we are dealing with essentially 50 or 60 years of what's known as asymmetric polarization. So the process by which the left and right have sort of have developed different norms, have operated under different media ecosystems for generations. And on the right, things have gotten increasingly polarized and even extremist in some ways. And there are lots of reasons why that is the case. But what it results in is you have a cleaving within the United States between one group of people who is being fed off of certain kinds of information, certain kinds of media, and another group of people who is getting different information from different groups. And one set of that information happens to be unmoored from empirical reality and tends often to be explicitly anti-scientific and anti-establishment. And any kind of formal or official explanation of something is suspect. And you couple that with how our attention economy works, that people are able to engage in what Anna Merlin, she wrote a great book about conspiracy theories, she describes as conspiracy entrepreneurship, that people make money off of these conspiracy theories, and social platforms are able to monetize and in some cases implicitly incentivize the propagation of these kinds of narratives. So everything in our information ecosystem is working towards the spread, the out of control spread of these kinds of narratives. And it really speaks to the fact that our systems are broken and we have to find a way to fix them, or else our entire lives will be one crisis such as this after another.
It seems that what really helps these kinds of theories to propagate and promulgate is the availability of the internet, that you know, suddenly everybody can shout and be heard by millions.
It's not just that everybody can shout and be heard by millions. It's that algorithms incentivize certain kinds of voices and certain kinds of narratives, that algorithms are not designed to reward people speaking in sort of moderate tones and making, you know, reasonable claims about the world. Algorithms are designed to spread the most sensationalized, outrageous, offensive information possible. And conspiracy theories certainly fall into that category. So the fact that conspiracy theories make social platforms money, they are good for social platforms business, has really contributed to an environment in which these kinds of extreme narratives have a lot of purchase within the attention economy. So it's not an accident that we have the COVID-19 conspiracy theories we have. We've, in a lot of ways, been set up for this for many, many years.
Sometimes, Whitney, science theories sound a little bit improbable. I mean, the idea that that this disease would come from bats, that bats would all be sick with this thing and it doesn't seem to bother a bat, and then it jumps to humans. I mean, that sounds like a second-rate science fiction film plot.
Well, I mean, scientific knowledge is different than conspiracy theorizing in that within science, you look at the available evidence and then you come to a conclusion. And with conspiracy theorizing, you start with the conclusion and then you find evidence to support it. And so people who are already inclined to believe that the deep state is up to no good or whatever the underlying subversion myth is, it is very easy to then find corroborating evidence or what looks like corroborating evidence for that particular claim. But it's science inverted in a lot of ways.
And what tools can you give to somebody who's not a scientist, you know, they're exposed to all this information, good and bad. What tools would you give to them to help them arrive at the truth?
The problem is that the tools that we would use to engage in critical thinking and to try to suss out evidence, that those tools are also subject to mis and disinformation. I mean, when you search a particular term within Google, if you encounter, for example, the phrase deep state or just Bill Gates COVID-19, Google, for one thing, is it functions as a search platform, but it's an advertising company. I mean, that's what it does. And so the way that its algorithms work, it's going to send you down the rabbit holes it thinks you want to go down. That based on previous searches of that kind, it's going to serve up certain kinds of information. And people think, okay, well, if I Googled it and these are the top five search results and I look through those search results, then I can feel pretty confident that I've done my homework. That's not how algorithms work. That's not how Google works. And so even when you're giving people the tools of critical thinking and sort of traditional media literacy skills, people can still get led astray because algorithms, which are totally opaque and you don't know what an algorithm is not showing you, can suggest to you that, well, here are some breadcrumbs. Why don't you follow those? Ooh, here are some more breadcrumbs. Why don't you follow those? And so it's actually sending people to do their homework can be dangerous. It can result in exactly the opposite consequence than what we might want. And so really it's less about what kinds of tools can you give to everyday social media users and more a question of how can we get social platforms to take responsibility for what gets posted on their platforms?
So, Whitney, if you were talking with a neighbor there in upstate New York and they said, well, you say that this is all conspiracy theory, that this is nonsense, they might say, well, how do we know? How do we know whether it's a conspiracy or not? What would you say to that?
I mean, that's the trick because subversion myths in particular, this idea that it's this evil, nefarious them that are out to get us. The problem is that by pushing back against that conspiracy, the structure of the conspiracy sort of loops you, the debunker, into the conspiracy itself. That denying the existence of the deep state is exactly what someone within the deep state would say. And so when you are trying to respond to someone who believes one of these theories, it's very likely that your debunks, your attempts to push back, are not only going to not convince them, but that they will actually reinforce the belief because now you've become one of them.
So that's the beauty of a conspiracy theory, is it not? I mean, you know, if you contest it, all you're doing is reinforcing the people who think there's a conspiracy.
Yes, exactly. But the problem is that our impulse is to try to correct false belief. And we feel often, particularly within journalism, there's this impulse, if you throw enough facts at somebody, eventually you're going to convince them. But the problem is that those facts can sort of splash back in really unpredictable ways. And there's a concept known as the boomerang effect, which states that if somebody really mistrusts a particular source of information, when that source denies a claim, that only serves as evidence of the claim. So if you think the New York Times is fake news and the New York Times debunks the Bill Gates conspiracy theory, guess what? That now serves as proof. That's now something you can post to say, here, see, these liars are saying that it's false and therefore it must be true. So these things are very, very difficult to respond to. And in the case of COVID-19, we're not talking about an idle narrative sort of disconnected from everyday experience. I mean, people's lives depend on us being able to communicate true, accurate information. But because of the way that conspiracy theory works, because of the way that belief works, that's really, really difficult to do. And people's lives are at risk as a result of it.
So how do you fight it? I mean, what do you say? Isn't that the whole thing? I mean, it's really difficult to come up with anything that you can say that's going to be effective other than in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think the trick is being aware of how easy it is to splash back information and to avoid doing that. That it is the impulse to scream about how Bill Gates did not create COVID-19 and he didn't do it to profit off of the vaccinations. That might feel good in the moment, or making fun of people who believe these kinds of things might feel good in the moment, and it might be reaffirming to your friends who are also frustrated and bored out of their minds. Stuck in their house. But the fact is that those things don't work, and in fact could make the problem worse by reinforcing the belief of people who loop you into the them. And so at the very least, by not engaging in the worst kinds of practices, you can minimize the amount of pollution that's produced, even if you can't personally intervene in somebody's own belief structures. And at times, not contributing to flows of polluted information is the best that we individually can do.
So finally, Whitney, does it matter if people believe outlandish conspiracies? If they want to believe in Bigfoot or whatever, I mean, you know, let them believe it, whatever. It doesn't really matter too much. But here we're fighting a pandemic. So if you had to explain why such conspiracy theories are either irrelevant or actually, you know, harmful to our response to the pandemic, what do you say to that?
Oh, they're absolutely harmful to our response to the pandemic. Part of the reason that we are in the situation that we're in with 40,000 plus people having died is because for the first 6 weeks, 8 weeks of the outbreak, there were so many people in the United States and abroad, but focusing specifically on the US, so many people who were primed through a lifetime of a particular kind of conspiratorial thinking to mistrust public health experts, to mistrust science, and to mistrust journalists. When those groups of people started to say, okay, we've got a problem here, we need to socially distance, we need to start engaging in these kinds of practices to protect ourselves and our communities, too many people saw that information and interpreted it as evidence of a conspiracy that they were going to resist with all their might because they didn't want the deep state to tell them what to do. And if those belief structures had not been in place, it may have been that more people would have been willing to start physically distancing or just listen to public health experts. But that's not how it played out. And we are dealing with the consequences, and we'll continue dealing with the consequences of a political system in which a significant number of the population looks at something that an expert says or that a scientist says and say, that must be a hoax of some kind. I don't have to listen. In fact, I'm going to do the opposite.
Whitney Phillips, thanks so very much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Whitney Phillips is a professor in the Communication and Rhetorical Studies Department at Syracuse University, who introduced herself to us as someone who studies everything that's terrible on the internet.
Well, the big picture here is that there are people who are taking advantage of this situation. Hardly surprising, it happens in every crisis. This particular one, which affects everybody, absolutely everybody, you know, it's kind of disillusioning to think that your fellow human, who's just as vulnerable as you are, is trying to take advantage of this, score a buck or get personal info, whatever they're trying to do.
You know, when Dr. Donovan was talking about how information moves, false information moves, it really has the behavior of a virus. And like a virus, misinformation spreads only if it's successful at infecting you.
Yeah, right. If you don't get infected, you're not spreading it because you probably don't believe it.
What are some tips for helping people to spot some of this misinformation and some of these phony cures and things like that?
First thing I'd suggest is they go on the web and look up Carl Sagan's baloney detection kit.
Hang on a minute, though. We just heard that the web is part of the problem. So you want to, maybe you could summarize Sagan's baloney detection kit for us.
It's pretty good. You know, it says some obvious things like, does this sound plausible? But, you know, some of the specific points are maybe not so obvious. Like, does anybody else say this other than, you know, your favorite website or whatever, right? That's one thing. If you're getting it only from one source, you know, you should be a little suspicious. The second thing is, yes, you know, everybody can be wrong, including scientists. But on the other hand, scientists can be expert. And you should ask yourself, the people who are suggesting this, are they experts? Or are they, you know, the guy next door, that kind of thing. Final thing, can you falsify it? Is it something that you can somehow prove it's not true? Because if they say, oh, no, well, I know it's true, but, you know, there's no way you can prove that, that's very, very suspect.
Yeah, that's the other idea that came through with these conspiracy theories, the idea that you can never prove them wrong, because if you throw more facts at them, then they just say that you don't understand the complexity or you're part of the problem, you're part of the deep state. And so it doesn't respond to evidence the way that science does. So that's one big difference.
It's very recursive that indeed, you know, if you don't agree, you're part of the problem. As a regular listener to this program, you're aware that there's a lot of misinformation out there about this outbreak. We've identified some in this episode, but you can be sure that more is on its way. Please remind others that if what they're hearing about this virus sounds incredible, or they're unsure what they should be doing to protect themselves, check the facts with reputable sources, your local public health service and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Follow the science.
We could not do the show without senior producer Gary Niederhoff and assistant producer Sarah Derwin. Thanks again to them for continuing to work on the show from their homes. I'm executive producer of Big Picture Science, Molly Bentley.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David, and to the William K. Bowes Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit education and research organization that supports science by publicly explaining its work. I'm the Institute's senior astronomer, Seth Shostak. Also, a big thanks to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to our monthly episode of Critical Thinking, Skeptic Check on Big Picture Science. This episode, COVID Conspiracy. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, you'll find past episodes in our archive at bigpicturescience.org, and you'll find links to our guests there as well.
You know about the suppressed transmission, of course.
Mm-mm.
No? Ah, well, way back there when they given us that one giant step for mankind bit, another astronaut's in the background yelling his fool head off saying, what the hell is that? Well, NASA cuts him off just like that. But those of us with the right kind of radios, you know what I mean? We got enough of it. The gist of it is a giant spacecraft over in the other crater. Looking at them. Oh, it all begins to leak out then that the space program is just one giant big cover-up. We've been on the moon since the 50s. You want to know how we got there, right? I tell you, anti-gravity technology, we stole it from the Nazis after the end of World War II. It's perfectly obvious.
Skeptic Check is brought to you thanks to a generous grant from the Trimberger Family Foundation. At the Trimberger Family Foundation, we hold that skepticism is a lamp that lights the way to truth. Trimberger.org.